We're going to wrap up this morning the series on renewing marriage. You know, we talked about there are three phases of marriage. Phase one is the honeymoon. That's sort of self-renewing. And then phase two, you get into the place where you start really learning how to become one flesh. And you learn that maybe marriage is a lot more difficult than you ever thought it possibly could be. And then hopefully eventually you move into phase three where you can really enjoy being one flesh because you start accepting each other the way you are and loving each other. We've been talking about all of this with respect to renewing marriage. How do you get through phase two? How do you learn to live with each other? And the context is marriage, but really all the things I've been talking about are really just life skills, things that you need to know in order to get by. The crucible of marriage has a way of clearly pointing out our own immaturities, our own areas that need to be inner healed, and our brokenness, our inadequacies, our inability to love each other and get along with each other. I mean, if you have any of those issues, for sure, you're going to find out about it in marriage, or at least in phase two of marriage. And they come to the surface, and that allows then the Lord to deal with them and allows us to be healed from those things. So renewing your marriage is really about growing up. It's really about being healed emotionally. It's really about learning to truly love, to not take offense at other people. That's the place where you learn the life skill of breaking the cycle of tit for tat and where you see others, not just your spouse, but you learn to see everybody through the eyes of Jesus. And then you learn to accept others and love them just the way we are. Turn to Proverbs 17, a scripture that ties back to what we talked about last week. We're talking last week about the hostilities that seem to build up in marriage, and we talked about the anger that you begin to feel for each other and the resentment, and that the best way to deal with that is to just not take in the anger in the first place. And so look at Proverbs 17, verse 14. It says, "The beginning of strife is like letting out water, so abandon the quarrel before it breaks out." The picture here is a picture of a dam or a levee. What this is talking about is that if you have a dam or a levee and it gets the smallest, tiniest leak, if you let that leak go, man, the whole thing is going to go. And so the idea is stop the leaks before they ever start. That's kind of the point of learning how to not take in those offenses from your loved one, not get angry in the first place. Well, I want to kind of home in this morning on the obstacles that we have to overcome in renewing our marriage, and that's our own immaturity. We all think about immaturity in terms of not being responsible. Well, they're just a kid. They can't be responsible for real things. But I also want to define immaturity as being wounded emotionally and still needing to be healed. So when I talk about immaturity, I'm talking about how we have emotional wounds that cause us to be susceptible to immature behavior. We're broken on the inside, and so that causes us to do things that are immature, like we lash out in retaliation. Well, a mature person doesn't do that. We give in to our impulses. We avoid dealing with difficult situations. Or we get lost in obsessive behaviors. That's an immature trait, but it usually comes from our woundedness on the inside, those wounds that haven't been healed. Folks that get lost in video games, or alcohol, or crossword puzzles, or work, or sports, or they become clean freaks. I mean, we could give a list about a mile long of obsessive behaviors that folks do. Most of those come from some kind of wound or trauma that needs to be healed. Do any of those sound like your spouse? If they do, then the whole point this morning is that they don't need to be lectured to or nagged about it. They need to have some inner healing. And you may or may not be able to provide that. All you may be able to do is just provide a safe, patient environment where they can be healed. We all go through a continual maturing and healing process all of our lives. If you think you've arrived and you don't need any inner healing, then you're just not mature enough to know any better. I hate to tell you that. Because we're never done with the process of growing. Turn to Philippians 3. We're always on the road to becoming more Christ-like. I mean, that's our epitome of maturity, right? It's Christ-likeness. We're always approaching. We're always trying to attain this maturity, this Christ-likeness. And this is what Paul says about his journey in this area. In verse 12, he starts off by saying, not that I have already obtained or have already become perfect. Now, that word perfect there is also the word that means mature. So he says, not that I've already become mature, I'm still striving for that. And then listen to what he says, I think this is so cool. But I press on in order that I may lay hold of that which has laid hold of me by Jesus Christ. I am apprehending that by which I have been apprehended. I'm chasing after that which has already captured me. What a great picture. Jesus has captured Paul, just like he's captured each of us. And now Paul is striving to become like Jesus. Goes on in verse 13. Brethren, I do not regard myself as having laid hold of it yet, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward to what lies ahead. Boy, if we could just do that in marriage, if we could just forget the thousand things our spouse has done to offend us and press on toward our own maturity. I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. It's like a parabolic curve, you know, that's always approaching zero, but it never quite gets there. Some of y'all will know that the term is asymptotic. It approaches zero asymptotically. That's the way we are in maturity. We're approaching it, but we never quite get there. We're either growing and maturing, we're going up, or we're going down. That's the only two choices you got. You can't just sit still. The minute you stop growing and maturing is the minute you slide back into woundedness and immaturity. That's why we have to always be looking forward to opportunities for the Lord to heal us, you know, give us inner healing, so He can reveal our brokenness, so He can show us things that it's okay to let go of. Let me tell you a story, and the point of the story is that sometimes this healing process, number one, takes a long time, and number two, it requires our spouse to give us this room and the space to be healed. When Debbie and I were first married, I was working, she was not, and we had some issues about who was carrying their load in the marriage. Now, I know no marriage has ever gone through that of who's doing the most or the right amount and stuff, but we did. And we kind of got into this mode where I would ask Debbie to do something in the morning before I left for work. And then when I got home, she might have done lots of things during the day, but for sure, whatever it was I asked her to do, that she would not have done. Honey, I need some socks. Can you please finish the laundry today? Do this. Can you call the insurance company and ask them this one question? Oh, yes, sure, I'll be glad to do that. And 10 or 12 hours later, when I get home, walk in the door, are my socks ready? No, and I would blow up. I mean, I would be so angry because she hadn't done the one thing that I asked her to do. And so I was praying about this and praying for Debbie. Lord, why don't you make her do what's right? You know, all this kind of stuff. And who knows? I mean, I'm not talking about whether I was right in the situation and she was wrong. That's really irrelevant. The point is that she was having trouble doing something and I was really blowing up and being angry with her. So the Lord said, you need to leave her alone about this stuff. You need to just shut your mouth and be quiet. Okay, that's good. When I get home tonight, I'm not going to say a word. Well, the minute I walked in the door, I blew up, okay? And so this became a matter of prayer on the way home. It was a 45-minute drive home. I had a pretty long commute. So every night for 45 minutes, I would pray, Lord, when I get home now, you need to give me grace to keep my mouth shut and to not ask any questions. And eventually, I got to where that I could be home maybe 5 minutes before I blew up, and then maybe 10 minutes before I blew up. And then eventually, after a couple of years, I got to the place where I could actually walk in the door and keep my mouth shut. Well, lo and behold, after doing this for a while, it got to where it wasn't so difficult for Debbie to do that one thing that I asked her to do. It's sort of like magic that God was able to heal her, but it took a while. Now, maybe I did or didn't have the right to be angry, and maybe she was or wasn't holding up her end of the bargain. That's not the issue. I thought it was the issue at the time, but it wasn't. See, what I was doing was I was rubbing salt in a wound and keeping that wound open all the time. Well, when I quit rubbing salt in the wound, the Lord was able to start healing that wound until I could forgive her and completely forget what had been going on. Then she was able to say, okay, now I can be free to be whoever I really am and what I want to be. But it may take a lot of time. And that's what I was talking about last week when I said we need to each of us do what's right toward our spouse, whether they do what's right or not. You know, we need to start the process of doing what's right. I mean, you are certain that your spouse is acting the way they are because they don't love you enough, because they don't care about the marriage, they don't care about your relationship, or if you were just the right husband or wife, then they would act right. I mean, there are all kinds of reasons you are certain they are acting the way they are acting, and you are wrong. 90% of the problems that we have in marriage, the way we act toward our spouse, has nothing to do with our spouse. It has everything in the world to do with our immaturity and the brokenness that we bring into our marriage. We believe so many lies, and it's those lies we believe that actually lead to the traumas we face in life. Let me give you some examples. Because the process of inner healing is one where we recognize the lies that we have believed as lies. And then once those lies are deposed, the truth can come in and can establish itself. And once we believe the truth, then we can be made free. But as long as a lie is standing where the truth is supposed to be, we believe the lie, then we'll never be free. Like, for instance, the man who was certain as a little boy that when his parents got divorced, it was his fault. And so now, as a man in his marriage, he is certain that his marriage is failing because it's his fault. And he's certainly wrong, because it's his fault and his wife's fault. That's just the way that works. Or the woman who grew up certain that she was sexually abused because there's something wrong with her sexually. And so now in the marriage, she's having trouble responding sexually, and she's certain that it's her fault because there's something wrong with her, and she's certainly wrong. You see, she's believed a lie. The husband who is certain that his wife doesn't love him because she can't keep the kitchen clean, you know, like I was talking about last week. When it has nothing to do with him or her love for him, it has everything in the world to do with how she was raised or something else that's going on in her life. Tell you a story on me about this kind of immaturity and the kinds of things that we bring in marriage. When Debbie and I first married, I had so many unresolved traumas and emotional broken areas in my life that my ability to face reality in life and people was limited to about 4 hours a day, okay? And so 4 hours of people and reality was pretty much my limit, and after that I just wanted to go off and be by myself. Well, you know, in 8 hours of work, it's pretty easy to get that 4 hours of reality and facing people all done with. And so by the time I'd get home, well, I was ready to be all by myself. And my poor wife, you know, here I was. By the time I got home, I was emotionally spent. You know, I was done. And she was certain that I was avoiding her because I didn't love her. And she was certain I was avoiding her because I didn't want to be around her. And she was certain I was doing this because somehow she wasn't being a good wife. And it had absolutely nothing to do with her. It had everything to do with problems that I had brought into the marriage. The real loving, caring husband, me, you know, was all covered up by unresolved emotional traumas and my own immaturity, and she just had to patiently wait and pray for me to come out of my shell. And it only took a few years. If you can catch this truth, that the person you first loved and married is still down in there somewhere, and that they're just covered up by their own immaturity and emotional traumas, then it's going to cut years off of this difficult process of actually becoming one flesh. When you catch this truth, you'll stop trying to fix them, and you'll stop trying to protect yourself from them, and you'll accept them the way God accepts them, and that's just the way they are. You'll start creating an environment where they can be healed and grow up. And, you know, if you really believe in miracles, maybe, just maybe, you can be healed and grow up, too, in the process. One of the reasons phase three of marriage is so enjoyable is because each spouse by then has really come to the place where they accept the other one just the way they are. And so when you give your spouse the time and the space to grow up, and you're really saying to them, I accept you just the way you are, warts, pimples, bad breath, beautiful eyes, great cooking, and all. I mean, the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know. Turn to John 3:17. Most of you can quote this verse, but I want to just look at three quick verses that show us how God loves us. That's our model for how we should love and accept each other. It's so nice in phase three to be at the place where you can relax. I don't have to worry about being somebody else. I don't have to worry about letting my wife see who I really am, because I know she's going to love me and accept me the way I really am. I can just relax now. And it's amazing how healing that relaxing process can be. John 3:17, for the Father didn't send his Son Jesus into the world to judge or condemn or to tell everything that the world had done wrong, but he sent him into the world so that the world could be saved through him. Look at Romans 8:1. And again, many of you could probably quote this to me. There is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Jesus Christ. Can you say that about your spouse? There is therefore now no condemnation for my spouse, no matter what they do. I'm not going to condemn them. That's the way God loves us. He's not mad at us. He's not angry with us. He's not disappointed with us. Can you say that about your spouse? I'm not angry with my spouse. I'm not disappointed with him. If you're in phase two, no, you probably can't say that. Well, that's where we got to get out of that. 1 Corinthians 13, the last phrase in verse 5 there, where it says that love, true love, godly love, does not take into account a wrong suffered. On your wedding day, you vowed to love each other no matter what. Can you love them now, meaning that you will not take into account the wrong things that they do? Can you love them and not be offended at what they do, their immaturity? Turn to 2 Corinthians 12. You'll probably not be able to learn how to accept your spouse on your own. That's one of the problems we have, is we think somehow we can work through this. No, you can't. You're going to need help. And the best place for help is God's grace. 2 Corinthians 12, verses 8 through 10, talk about Paul's struggle with his thorn in the flesh. It says, concerning this, I entreated the Lord 3 times that it might depart from me. But God said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather boast about my weaknesses, my immaturity. I will boast about my husband's weakness, about his lack of inner healing, about her lack of inner healing, so that the power of God can dwell in me. Let's make this about what we're talking about, because we're talking about needing God's grace, his supernatural power to love and accept our spouse. Look at verse 10. Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses. He's not just talking about his own weaknesses, because look at the rest of it. I am well content with my spouse's weaknesses, with their insults, with their distresses, with their persecutions of me, and with difficulties in our marriage. I'm content with that. I can settle down in that because I know that when I am weak, that's when I can be strong through God. You're going to have to let go and let God do it for you and with you. And if you don't have that power of God, you're going to be in a miserable phase to your marriage for a long time. You want to accept your spouse the way God does? It's going to take God's grace. It's a miracle thing that's going to happen. I feel sorry for couples that get married and they're not in the Lord. They're not serving God, both of them. I don't know how in the world their marriage is ever going to survive. You can't become one flesh without God's help, unless you just turn off somehow and just become roommates, you know. Marriage isn't some kind of game. It's not an escape hatch. You know, a lot of singles think, oh boy, if I could just get married, I could get out of this difficult situation I'm in. Oh, no, man. It's like going from the frying pan into the fire. Marriage is difficult, and it doesn't just happen. You have to do stuff on purpose to make the marriage work. Time to grow up and accept your spouse just the way they are is something you have to do on purpose. It's an act of will where you stop being angry with them and you stop being disappointed with them. And as an act of will, you stop condemning them for every little infraction. And as an act of will, on purpose, you stop keeping track of all the things that they've done wrong. That's what makes phase three of marriage so worth getting to. Oftentimes, it's that being loved and accepted by your spouse that allows you to be healed yourself. Give them time. Give them a safe place to grow up. That's what we do with our teenage kids, is give them a safe place and the patience and the time for them to actually grow up into functioning adults. So give your spouse what they need for the maturing process. Safe means no condemnation, no threats, no manipulation, no coercion, none of this tit-for-tat stuff. We notice how immature our spouse is while we somehow overlook our own immaturities. I mean, it's just human nature. Oh, man, they are just so immature. I just can't believe they did that. But when we do exactly the same thing, we look over it because we understand, well, yeah, but I had a reason for it. I got an excuse for doing that, see. And unfortunately, that kind of hinders our process in our marriage because we're thinking they're wrong, we're not. Hey, look, we're just all in it together. We need to recognize that and start on purpose being willing to do the right thing and accept our spouse the way God and life made them and just give them a safe place to grow up. The third obstacle to renewing our marriage is something you're going to have to listen closely to because I don't think you've ever heard this before. Pay attention because I call it loss of life as you knew it and getting over that. The death of a close loved one is really difficult. A lot of us here have had someone very close to us die recently. And if you don't bury them and you don't mourn their passing and go through a process after they have died, then you're going to have kind of an open wound or sore that's not going to heal until you do mourn them. And once they're gone, you can't bring them back. It's one of the first things you recognize and that you mourn over. And that empty place there that they leave will fester and poison you if you don't bury them. You need to bury them, you need to mourn over their death, and then you need to get up and clean your clothes and go on with life, right? We've all been through this, many of us recently. That's how it has to work, right? Well, many of you have had a death in the family. You know, somebody has died, you just don't know who. You miss the deceased fiercely, and you haven't yet had a funeral. You haven't buried the dead, you haven't mourned their death, and you're suffering because you haven't grieved for that death and gone on with life. So who is this mystery loved one that has died? Well, it's life as you knew it. Your life that was. That life that is never coming back now that you're married. It sneaks up on us, and we don't know what's wrong with us. All we know is that we're depressed, we're irritable, we're overwhelmed with life, we're tired all the time, we're unhappy with life. We have all the symptoms that we would have had somebody close to us died, and we didn't mourn their death. But nobody's died recently, so this is what's happened. Remember when you were single and dating? Remember how much time you had? I mean, you could just kind of pretty well do whatever you wanted to. Wonder what I'm going to do all day Saturday. I don't know. And you call friends, and you go to movies, and you go to the football games, and you go out for coffee whenever you want to. If it's 1 o'clock in the morning and you want a cup of coffee, hey, let's go get a cup of coffee. I mean, hey, it's kind of loose and free, right? You spend all your time with friends and talking to people and doing nothing in particular, no real responsibility. I mean, yeah, Dad makes you mow the lawn once a week, and Mom makes you clean your room once a month, whether it needs it or not. But I mean, other than that, life's cool. Oh, you get a job, but that's so you can pay for the gas, for the car, for the movie tickets, for the lattes. I mean, you don't have to have the money. You're doing this so you can have fun, right? Life is easy. Life is good. Remember that? Everybody remember your life then? And then when you fell in love and you got married, woohoo, man, life even got better, right? Whoa, this is great. And then all of a sudden the reality of being responsible for family finances starts to set in. And you have to budget, and you can't go to Starbucks for a super latte anytime you want to anymore. And then a kid comes along, and that's a great joy, and it's a great miracle. But, you know, changing diapers and not getting any sleep and being responsible for feeding the baby, I mean, oh, man, after a while, you don't even have time to hardly feed yourself, much less to do all the fun things that you used to do. And Saturday is the day to play all day, right, like it used to be? No, Saturday's the day you catch up on the laundry and on the yard work and on doing the budget. And what happened to all that freedom and fun that you used to have? Don't you miss it? Yeah? And then the second or the third child arrives, and for sure, any life that you ever knew before is gone, gone, gone forever. You have lost a most dear loved one. You have lost life as you used to know it. You've lost your freedom, you've lost time to play, you've lost the ability to do what you want, you've lost the childish fun. That life that you used to know is just as dear to you as any loved one that's recently died. And that life as you used to know it is just as gone as any loved one who has recently died. And your emotions are reacting to the loss of that loved one whether you know it or not. And you're reacting exactly the same way as if you had lost a close family member. And if you don't deal with that grief, and if you don't acknowledge the loss, if you don't grieve over it, if you don't bury it and then decide to go on with life, then you'll stay in that depression and that funk and that overwhelmed by life and all that stuff. You just stay in that. This is my suggestion. You and your spouse take some time together and spend some time talking about life as it used to be or life as you knew it and what you've lost. I mean, remember it in all of its past glory. You know how you'd do at a funeral of a loved one? You get pictures of them and their friends out, right? You play their favorite music that they used to listen to. You talk about them and you laugh and you cry about all the wonderful things that you remember about them. Husband and wife, do that about life that you're missing, life as you knew it. And you need to have a funeral. Have a formal funeral, just you and your husband or wife for that life. You may even want to bury it. Get a box. Put some pictures in it. Take one of those Starbucks cups, you know, that you used to go get Starbucks anytime you put it in the box. I mean, whatever is indicative of that you have lost, put it in that box and take it out in the backyard and bury it and have a service. And spend 40 days mourning over it. I mean, if you want to, wear black every day for 40 days, something black. Do something that reminds you that you're mourning this precious person that you have lost. And then after about 40 days, take a good shower, change your clothes, and get up and go on with life. And say, I'm going to go on and I'm going to face life, the new life I have. I'm going to look at it as an adventure. I'm going to look at it as something new to go for. This is what I've discovered. I was basically a Peter Pan as a kid. I just never wanted to grow up because I thought it was going to be so hard to be responsible. I discovered, though, what happens was once you become mature, facing the responsibilities of life all of a sudden is a whole lot easier. And so it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it would be to grow up. So have a funeral, dust off your old life, get over the depression that comes with that, and that's the only way you're going to be able to do it, is mourn it and go on. Well, I just want to leave you with a warning about doing these things that I've suggested. There are several techniques that I've suggested over the last few weeks. Life and the devil both are going to challenge you and try to stop you from doing these things. For instance, we talked about how important personal intimacy is, that you need, even during phase two, in the heat of all the fights and everything, you need to find some time where you can be close and intimate with each other. You need to set date nights if necessary. And I can promise you that what's going to happen is either your own subconscious or the enemy is going to challenge you, and he's going to bring up about 10 good reasons to start a fight right before your date. And you're going to need to resist that. Anything that's worth having, anything that's good in life, like phase three of a marriage, is worth fighting for, and I promise you, you're going to have to fight for it. So just be careful about those things. They are going to come along. If your marriage isn't going as smoothly as you'd like, take heart. The condition is not permanent, or at least it doesn't have to be permanent. It may seem desperate and hopeless right now, but you know, with people praying for you and with the grace of God, we all change, and who knows, not only will your spouse change, maybe you'll change some too, and there'll actually be healing there. Try some of these things out. Let's help each other. Couples, help each other apply these principles, you know, pray for each other, listen to each other. You might even want to lean on your parents some. You may be surprised how much your parents have learned about marriage in the last 10 years since you left home. Don't hesitate to come to me and Debbie. That's why God has placed us here, is to be able to help in just exactly these kind of situations. And the last thing I'd like to suggest is make sure that you go on a Lazarus weekend with us. These Lazarus weekends are about inner healing, and I think everybody needs to be going through those kind of processes at least occasionally. Every few years, at the very least, we all need those kind of things.